committee will come to order. We don't yet have a quorum, and so we will wait just a minute before we move on the minutes. We've got a very full agenda, and we've got to use every minute, I believe. You have all of the information in your packet to follow along, and I'll give you just a minute to find that. We are going to begin with an overview of higher education asset preservation and replacement, or HEPR as we know it, by House Research Analyst Kathy Novak, and I believe this is your handout that members may want to have before them. Happy to have you here, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kathy Novak. I'm with the Plus Research Department, and I'm just going to do a really brief overview of HEPR and what the law is on HEPR and how the requests come in, and then just a quick look at some funding considerations and trends. The legislature in 1994 passed the HEPR law. It was patterned on a law that was passed in, for the executive branch that's known as CAPRA. These are just great acronyms. And that was the Capital Asset Preservation and Replacement Requirement. And so in 1990, the legislature passed HEPR, and as you can, the actual law is in your packet, but I'm just going to talk a little bit from this outline of it. It had a purpose that recognized how unique the two public post-secondary systems were in managing the vast amount of properties that were under their control. And it also recognized the needs for standards to preserve and replace the facilities that are in the higher education, public higher education system. And it established those standards in this law by listing broad categories of projects that are eligible for HEPR funding. And this really sets the standards for what the systems can use their HEPR funds for, and these broad categories include code compliance, health and safety measures, compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, abatement of hazardous materials, improvements for access or air quality, and repairs to building or infrastructure that are needed to preserve the interiors or exteriors, and to renew or support the campus mission. It finally requires a report back to the Department of Finance and to the legislature. We kind of give this money out in just big blocks, and so the report is the funnel that comes back to the legislature and is accountable for the project money that they get. It requires the department, in this case the Board of Regents and the Board of Trustees, to list all the projects that are funded from the money they got and to list priorities for projects that they're going to request in the next funding cycle. The request for projects, that kind of leads us into the transition to the request for projects. In addition to the HEPR law, the legislature passed an amendment to an existing law in 2000, and that law is also in your packet, but it required, or it encouraged, it didn't actually require, the two systems to consider things when they're making their capital budget requests. And the first thing is the maintenance and preservation of existing facilities. And since that time, since the law was passed in 2000, and I'm not certain before that, but I think definitely since that time, higher education asset preservation has been the first priority of both the University of Minnesota and the Institute in their capital budget requests. The other thing that HEPR requests are based on is the knowledge that the two systems have of their facilities. University of Minnesota has conducted a facilities condition assessment program that helps them to prioritize their requests. And MinSCU has information on building conditions through a series of engineering assessments on deferred maintenance and other special studies of roofs and other capital considerations. The request on from the systems to the legislature on HEPA takes several forms. One can be just one form is just a broad blanket request for a certain amount of money, and the detail is not included in the budget. And that's essentially an acceptable request form because we have the allowable uses in law, so they can only use the money for those types of projects that are listed in the HEPA law. I believe in the packet I included an example of the University of Minnesota's 2006 budget request, which just has a dollar amount for HEPA. The other type of request is a list of specific projects, locations, and funding amounts. And again, there's an example in the packet of the MNSU request from 2006 that lists in quite a bit of detail the campuses that for the request and the type of project and the amount of money that's associated with that request. And the types of project include roof replacements, roof repair, HVAC system repair and replacement, fire sprinklers, boiler replacements, exterior window replacements, repair of pool decks, all things that would fit within the broad categories that are outlined in the HEPA law. And then occasionally, HEPA is worked into a project. If you're going to build a whole new building or replace a building, some portion of that in the budget request may be allotted to HEPA. I can think of, there are several examples, but once in 2002, the University of Minnesota requested $8 million for Jones Hall renovation as a HEPA request. It ultimately was funded, but not as HEPA as a project. In 2006, the MNSU request for system-wide science lab and applied technology initiatives also had some HEPA components to it. So those are the ways that the various ways that they ask for money. When we talk about funding for HEPA, and this isn't part of the law, but it is the practice of the legislature to not subject the HEPA appropriations to the one-third debt requirement that other projects funded by the state for the University of Minnesota or MNSU have. So in other words, the entire HEPA appropriation is state general obligation bond. And that is very specific in the bonding bill. There's an example from the last bonding bill in your packet that specifically says that for the University of Minnesota, that they're expected to cover one-third of the cost of their project except for higher education asset preservation and replacement. And then for MNSU, they're expected to pay the debt service and one-third of the principal except for asset preservation. The legislature never fully funds the HEPA request of the system. It always funds a portion of it, and kind of over the years that portion has been around 30 to 40% of what they've asked for. But one of the issues with that is when a system makes a very detailed request, like MNSU did last time, when we only fund a portion of that, we're not entirely clear what we're buying with that amount of money. Because it doesn't match up with the request that came in. I mean, they're probably able to give us that money and sometimes for that information, and sometimes they do. But it's one of the issues with not matching up funding to the request. And then if we just look kind of quickly at some of the trends in HEPA funding, since the law was enacted, the the state has funded about $360 million in HEPR, which that's from 1996 to 2006. So that's a big amount of money.
Ms. Novak, from these graphs, it would appear that really in the last three cycles we've actually done rather well compared to the four preceding. Would that be true?
That is true. Funding for HEPR has more than tripled from the early days of when it was first part of the capital budget. From 1996 to 2006, the state has more than tripled the amount of money it's put into HEPR. The size of the bond gilts have also gotten larger over that time period, but not in the same rate. But yes, that was kind of the point of this graph, is that we're doing better. We're putting more into HEPR than we had earlier, kind of in the neighborhood of $30 to $40 million for the University of Minnesota and around $40 million for Minsky over the last three bonding cycles. And then finally, there's a lot of numbers.
Peterson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I remember when we were debating the issues in the bonding committee the last couple of years, that although we put a lot of money in HEPR, the question kept coming up, because that was deferred maintenance, there should be, or shouldn't there be, a priority to maintain what we have and keep it current and keep it safe and keep it sound before we start building new buildings, because as we would build new buildings, it was going to again cause a deferred maintenance if we don't keep that going. And I, even though we've spent a lot of money, I look at the last report and they see where the Minsky request was $110 million and we funded $40 million. So that deferred maintenance doesn't go away. It, in fact, probably the problems get worse if it's a roof or a, and how do we balance that, and will that be, again, a verbal priority that we'll talk about as we progress down this road?
And Representative Peterson has absolutely outlined the motivation for why we're focusing on this today. There is something about the nature of those buildings, when you have the Carlson School of Management or Trafton Hall or a science classroom somewhere, it is so clear and so real where that's going and what it is. And all of our conversation last year was we were going to make maintenance the most important.
Yeah.
But when it finally comes down to those buildings, it seems, because of the anonymous nature of that HEPR request, that it seems easier when we're suddenly looking for $10 million to go back to the HEPR line. And so we thought that would be the very reason for focusing this year, for early on helping the committee understand what this is and maybe taking advantage of an off year to not get distracted by buildings, but to just focus on this. So you've outlined the motivation. Representative Mahoney.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, I have a bill on my desk that I was going to drop in today, but I just, forgot it on the desk, that takes all that inflationless surplus that our governor keeps talking about and splits it between the U of M and Minsky, and pretty much wipes out all that deferred maintenance for, there's probably not quite enough. I think it's only $1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. But it gets it pretty close to wiping out the deferred maintenance.
And some of us have, of course, thought that one-time money might very well help us with some of the one-time infrastructure needs. So, conclude, Ms. Novak?
Yeah, the final thing is just is the table, and I'm not going to talk clearly about any of the numbers or all of the numbers on here. And you can see, if you look at it, that, as we said before, HEPR funding from the state has increased. That's the second column of numbers. The requests have also increased in size, and the total size of the bonding bill requests from the university and institute has also grown. But keepers tends to be now a somewhat larger share of their bonding requests than it was in the mid-90s.
Any questions of Ms. Novak, Representative Silver?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry I'm late, and you may have talked about this already. It's not really a question to Ms. Novak, but one of the things that we're also finding as a HEPA request increase is that the systems themselves say, well, this is maintenance we should do out of our budget. Well, if we postpone it, we can spend that money some other place, or we haven't given them enough money to be able to spend it to manage our system. And so then it gets deferred, and pretty soon it becomes a more expensive project as well. Or, and I would never accuse the systems of saying this or doing this, but, you know, and I know that they have pressure on their budgets like everybody else, but it is a way of being able to defer things and spend the money that would normally be in maintaining my house. When we have we relate to ourselves, and if I have a leaky roof, I better fix it quickly, otherwise it will cause more problems. And if I don't have the money for it, well, then we defer it. And sometimes some of these projects should be coming out of their regular maintenance budget as well.
That's probably a good setup for the systems when they come later.
Oh, are they coming?
Representative Peterson, did you have an...
Madam Chair, I get punchy about this time of the afternoon, so I'm going to reserve that question.
Representative Carlson.
Maybe a little later, Mr. Pitsenreiter can comment on the depreciation question and how that fits into the deferred maintenance numbers. He's commented on that before. The other thing is that the budgets, and they might come from this represents over the history of the base operating budgets of the two systems are a little different when you start talking about maintenance. I think, at least years ago, funding for like things like roof repair often was in the university's base budget where it wasn't necessarily in Minsky's, but that may have changed. It's been a long time since I've been on this committee. They may want to comment on that as well, but I think those are... We have to understand the differences in terms of...
For both our ways and means and finance chair, you have a little additional. Any further questions for Ms. Novak? If not, thank you very much. And members, we do now have a quorum, and Representative Burns, are you willing to move the minutes for January 23?
Yes, I am, Chair.
Representative Burns moves the minutes for January 23. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries, and the minutes are adopted. We have first on our agenda the University of Minnesota, and we're joined by Richard Pitsenreiter and Kathleen O'Brien, who will further identify themselves for the record. And I think, again, you have this a copy of the overheads in your packet. Welcome to the committee, and Mr. Pitsenreiter, are you the lead-off, or Ms. O'Brien? Ms. O'Brien, I believe you,
Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and committee members, we greatly appreciate the opportunity to meet with you this afternoon to talk about the university's deferred renewal issue. We'll speak about that. I first would like to introduce Regents Steve Hunter and Cynthia Lesher, who are with us today as well. As Ms. Novak said, the University of Minnesota has conducted a facilities condition assessment. The university...
I am wondering, both of you, it might require you to position yourself for the microphone, but it's not picking up for some reason, so you might need to readjust where you are.
Does that work better?
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's that deep voice of mine. The University of Minnesota has conducted a facilities condition assessment. This is an inspection-based assessment. The university started this practice about 4 years ago,
It takes about 3 years to go through the 28 million gross square feet at the University of Minnesota and do this inspection-based assessment. So we're on the second round of updating these assessments. The assessments include not only buildings, but also infrastructure and utilities. The university, as I said, has 28 million gross square feet of space across the state of Minnesota. 70% of that space is more than 30 years old. It's very complex space. As you reflect on what's at the University of Minnesota, there's classrooms, there's clinics, there are animal hospitals, greenhouses, offices, performance spaces. When I think about the university, I think maybe the only thing we don't have is a casino. We got just about everything else at the university. And really, the facilities condition assessment then is a central repository of the conditions of our buildings. And it really gives us a time year, a 10-year framework of what we should expect to have to address. And really addressing the discussion that occurred on the committee just before we came up, I would like to address the issue of deferred maintenance versus deferred renewal. It is absolutely the case that the university makes a substantial investment in the maintenance of its buildings and repairs roofs and keeps chillers running and addresses code and life safety issues. And that's part of our ongoing budget. But just as we maintain our cars, after a certain number of miles, even if you keep the tires inflated right and get them checked or you get your brakes fixed, you still need to have them replaced. And so we really are really addressing issues of facilities renewal as opposed to maintenance when you look at the kind of issues that we bring forward in our, that we identify in our facilities condition assessment. And we've really identified in the assessment about $810 million of building components that have lived beyond their useful life. Ms. Novak has described the statute relating to the Higher Education Asset Preservation and Replacement Fund. In this request, we've really focused on three improvement categories: health and safety, water infiltration, and building systems. And I thought it would be helpful to give you some examples of what is in the request without going through the list in an exhaustive way. These include fire alarm systems in multiple buildings on the East Bank, West Bank, and the Academic Health Center, fire alarm system in the research lab building at UMD, water infiltration projects, and I noticed on Minsky's list they were dealing with water infiltration too. I think that's part of living in Minnesota and dealing with water coming into buildings, and then how do we avoid the mold and health issues that might occur because of that if we don't address them. So this would be cases in the Morris Student Center, Camden Hall and Beamer Hall on the Morris campus, the Biological Sciences Building on the St. Paul portion of the Twin Cities campus, the West Bank Plaza on the Twin Cities campus, that if you're on the West Bank, you might think of it as a plaza. It's actually the roof of academic buildings. There's classrooms and offices under that plaza. Moose, MCB Plaza on the Academic Health Center area, and then building systems such as the Sahlstrom Conference Center in Crookston that has structural issues, and the Animal Science Vet Med building on the St. Paul campus of the Twin Cities that has falling and failing face bricks. So these are examples of what is in the proposal that is before you, the $22 million that's before you. We thought it would be useful for you to have examples of how we spent recent HEPR dollars. On the Twin Cities campus, Smith Hall, which is the home of the chemistry department, a department that serves many different majors and that's really essential to students in the School of Medicine and IT, as well as biological sciences and the environment.
The renovation of the existing roof at Smith Hall had an estimated budget of $1.2 million. We're very proud that we brought that roof replacement in at $947,000, and it was completed on time in November of this year, funded out of 2005 HEPR funding. The Darlin Administration Building on the Duluth campus, this was an exterior stone replacement and waterproofing project, as the frame connotates. The Darlin exterior stone had been rapidly deteriorating over the past several years. A temporary patch had been done on these panels about 10 years ago, again trying to maintain the building to extend the stone lines. But the precast concrete panels deteriorated to a point that it was becoming a safety issue on campus. We just really didn't want people walking around under those panels. The projected cost is of $3.5 million. Construction began in February of 2006 and was completed in September of 2006. And we're pleased to say that that came in very, really just under that project budget. And the third example we're bringing today is the Tate Physics Lab. The Tate Physics Building is also on the mall on the Twin Cities East Bank campus, and we did a chiller piping replacement in the Physics Building. We removed existing chiller water lines and controls and replaced them with new chiller water lines, including electrical and all related construction. This not only means that that chiller project will work better, it also means that we will gain efficiencies both in operations and energy savings. The projected project was $490,000, and the cost came in at about $465,000 and was completed in 2006, funded about half by 05 HEPR and half by 06 HEPR. So these are examples of projects that were very important to the continued health and use of those academic buildings that came in on time, under budget, and made very good use of the HEPR that you gave us. The next frame really outlines then our 22...
One of the examples you gave us, Mr. Ryan, is the Darlin Administrative Building. Can you tell me how old that building is?
Ms. O'Brien.
I am going to just guess that it was built around 1960. If Greg Fox were here, he could give us the exact number.
Thank you.
Thank you. Maybe Representative Murphy would know, too. I think, Madam Chair, I think that's a pretty good estimate.
Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Representative Mahoney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Silberg, you should have been in the last committee. Representative Lucadina was talking about his playing pool up there at the Duluth campus, and he got all the time frames down just perfect. But my real question for Ms. O'Brien is, when you come in under budget on these, does that HEPA money stay at the in the system, or is that returned to general funds, or the bonds just not issued so that you can do more? If you keep that money, are you able to do more with it?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, those dollars remain in our HEPR funds, and we reallocate them to other HEPR projects.
Continue.
So we get rewarded for using those dollars. The $22 million are really allocated then against across these improvement types, health and safety, water infiltration, building systems. They are spread across the University of Minnesota system, as you can see on the various campuses. And these dollar figures really align with the facility condition assessment reports that have identified priority projects that need attention immediately. And we really have brought forward those this year that we believe need attention in the coming year. And that is our summary for today.
Representative Bean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. O'Brien, I'm looking at the comparison from this packet that was passed out. It was Kathy Novak had passed it out. And it looks back several years at HEPR requests and the amount of HEPR dollars that were given. And I look back to 2006, there was a U of M request of $80 million, and $30 million of that was appropriated in our last bonding bill, from what I understand. I'm looking at this year's request that should have left $50 million on the table. You're requesting only $22 million, and we underfunded your last request by $50 million. I'm wondering what kind of priorities went into that request and what kind of priorities are going into this request and why they're so different.
Ms. O'Brien.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Dean, I'll take a shot at answering that question, but I'll also ask Mr. Fitzenreiter to add to this. First, I would say the request that we brought forward this year is based on reprioritized needs. Some of those were projects that were on our last year list. Some of those are projects that, because of water infiltration and other systems failures, that have come onto the list new. So we are certainly recognize the debt capacity of the state. We reprioritized our list this year and the amount we were asking for based on what we knew we could spend this year and what we needed immediately. We have a much more extensive list that is prioritized based on our facilities condition assessment, and we'll be back at next year's bonding bill with the our next allocation of projects that we really need to have addressed.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think it was just as a new person on the committee last year, it was just a little bit it was difficult to look at the $80 million request without an appropriation, just to say, give us $80 million, we need to maintain our facilities because we've got 28 million square feet. And it's very difficult to make a good decision without the kind of breakdown and prioritization that I think the committee is looking for this year. And I believe Minsky, I think, has done a fairly good job in terms of breaking it apart by building, by need, and by dollar amount, and saying at least this is where we're going to spend the money and this is how we're going to spend the money. So I just was wondering if there is, from an agency standpoint, from the University of Minnesota, a viewpoint of how the capital requests are made and how those priorities are made. I think that we might have a little better cooperation if those priorities were better laid out. Huh? That's just a comment.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, the list that you're requesting has been provided to you. It was last year. It is available. Our request isn't a blanket request. It's based on real projects that have been prioritized based on the facilities condition assessment, just as this request is today. So that detailed list is available to you, as is our report on spending.
So to clarify, Ms. O'Brien, before we would put our bill together, that, for example, the Twin Cities campus line, you would have detail of that we could provide for the rest of the committee.
Absolutely. Yes.
And so we'll
absolutely,
work,
Madam.
We'll work at that. Representative Peterson, did I see?
No.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, the question I was asking earlier about depreciation, and I see now on your cover sheet that it says inspection, not depreciation based. My question would be at Mr. Fitzenreiter, because I think we used to talk about a much larger number, and I think your testimony at the time was that depreciation was included. So I assume that that's now out, but if you could explain what the history of that issue is and how that impacts kind of the bottom line of your HEPR request, inspection versus what I assumed before was inspection as well as depreciation. But
Madam Chair, members, up until the university actually having an inspection-based approach to what our needs were, the CFO but not an accountant, that folks would take more of an accounting view of the world and say, well, what is the what would it cost to replace everything at the university? And they would come up with a life cycle type number that was enormous. We went to an inspection-based process, and what we described in the $800 million is what is, in our view, based on an inspection, what is necessary for those parts of the university whose useful life is either over with or about ready to be over with. Before it was, I would take the window as an example, where the window isn't broken, but the useful life is gone, in theory, but it's still keeping the wind out. It's not broken. What we've got here is inspection-based numbers. It's different than an accounting view of the world of depreciation. That's how we used to talk about it, because frankly, we didn't have any other way to talk about it. I think what we have now is grounded more firmly in actual inspections of what we need.
Carlson, further?
No, that answers my question. I'm just trying to remember a little history there. Thank you.
Are there further questions of the university? If not, we thank you for sharing this, and then at some point in the coming weeks, we will perhaps connect with you to get that larger breakout and share that with members of the committee.
We would be happy to do so. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you very much. Now we have the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. Alan Johnson, I believe, is the speaker, Associate Vice Chancellor of Facilities, and you have a packet in a green folder that provides you details of his presentation. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the tape. Alan Johnson, Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities at Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and we're in the midst of the technology change here, so we'll be up live here in just a moment.
And while you're doing that, we should note one more regent has entered the room who wasn't introduced earlier. And while they are, by the way, if for those of you who may not know her or have not read that news story, the other regent introduced earlier, Cindy Lesher, is chair or co-chair of the committee that will get us ready for the 2008 Republican convention, and so has her work cut out for her.
And Madam Chair, in the audience today with me is President Don Day from our Tribal and Community College at Cloquet, as well as several representatives from our state universities and the Office of the Chancellor. Are we live?
We know everything actually works in this room.
Yes.
So it must be a hookup. Do we have someone we can call on outside the room? We'll find. It seems to be here.
Must be youth that does that. I don't know how that stuff works. Well, thank you for the opportunity to be with you this afternoon to talk about our capital budget request for 2007. It is primarily a HEPA request with two pieces of land acquisition. Let me give a brief overview for some of the new committee members. Of course, we're located on 32 colleges and universities around the state. We're located on 53 separate campus sites and serving 46 communities. Our byline that we've used several years now is that we educate Minnesota, we make it work. More than half the state's new teaching graduates, 53% on last count, come from MinSCU institutions. Close to 80% of the state's new nursing graduates, 92% of the state's law enforcement officers, 91% of the new construction trades, as well as auto mechanics and auto technicians. 42%, which is not on the slide, but 42% of our new business graduates in the state come from our institutions. We're about one-third of the state building space. You heard from the University of Minnesota at about 28 million square feet, and we're about just under 26 million square feet compared to other state agencies, which are about 28 million square feet. Our capital request this year is $30 million of HEPR, and I'm glad we've had a lot of explanation as to what that is, and also property acquisition at $3.8 million. For the new committee members, I'd like to give a little bit of background on how our process works, and for that I'll have to take you back to the 2006 capital budget and the guidelines that were created for that budget, because that's the basis still of the $30 million request that we have before you this year. The capital budget in within Minnesota State Colleges and Universities is always based on the system's strategic plan, and you see the strategic directions that were part of the development of that 06 capital budget. Some of you may see that these are slightly different now in the operating budget proposal that you have before the House this year, because the strategic plan has been updated. But nevertheless, this is the basis of our budget request and our budget process from last year. And again, that goes back as long ago as July of 2004, when the board, from their strategic plan, developed guidelines. I would say the next significant event was November of 2004, when campuses submitted proposals. And I have to say that our capital budget is basically campus-based. Campuses develop their master plans. Campuses are aware of their condition, physical condition, and condition assessment. And campuses set the priorities for us. And you can see there 2 years ago that 68 projects were brought forth at $315 million and 394 HEPR projects for $240 million. That's what came in the door to us a little over 2 years ago. Technical reviews were conducted in December and early 2005. And as a matter of fact, now we sit here now in 2007 and we have just completed technical reviews for the 2008 capital program. In March of 2005, the board held public hearings and addressed all the campus's priorities. That will also take place now in March of 2007. We'll have board hearings on the 2008 capital program. And you see there in June of 2005, then, from the 394 HEPR projects at $240 million, the board approved going forward to the legislature last year with 165 projects valued at $110 million. Ms. Novak went over the definition of HEPR, and that's what we comply with totally. It is a major source, significant source of our major repair and replacements. We've looked upon HEPR in the last 6 to 8 years as the primary source to tackle this backlog that's been mentioned. The definition, of course, allows for renewal for existing uses, so you can renew a classroom, you can renew a science lab, but under the HEPR definition, you couldn't convert a classroom to a science lab or vice versa. Our 2000 request is broken down with $9.7 million for roof replacements, $7.6 million for replacing heating and cooling systems and components of those systems, $2 million for fire protection, and $10 million for other types of HEPR work, for a total of $30 million. These are largely the projects that were unfunded from 06. There were several urgents that have been added to the list, but most of this carries forward from 06.
Representative Mahoney has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm hearing you talk about 2004, and we're here in 2007. Could you give me an idea of if you've got a leaky roof, to make an example that we've used, how long does it take generally for you to fix the leak? I mean, if I'm looking at this sheet right, it's 3 or 4 years. Am I kind of in the ballpark?
Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney, unfortunately, we have leaky roofs that have been leaking for 2, 3, 4 years, and they are fixed on a leak-by-leak basis using operating dollars to fix leak-by-leak-by-leak. But it does come a time when the roof simply needs to be replaced, just like we do on our own homes. And that's what we go for here, is a roof replacement. As those roofs leak, it uses operating dollars to bring out a roofer to find and patch one small leak or two small leaks somewhere. And it uses campus labor, certainly to mop up the water and to move the buckets around and to move the books and the computers. So it's unfortunate, but these roofs that are on our list now have been leaking and do continue to leak.
Thank you.
Continue.
Our request in 2007 is made in context of a number of things. First of all, it's made with a knowledge of our backlog of $646 million. We, too, developed this backlog number through a condition assessment program. In 1999, we did a detailed campus-by-campus, square-foot-by-square-foot assessment and came up with a backlog at that time of about $500 million. In 2005, we approached it from a little bit different perspective. Representative Carlson used depreciation. Mr. Fitzenreiter used the word accounting perspective. And so we've taken a look now at a broader view and looking at life cycles, the life cycle cost, the life cycle expectation of building components in developing another backlog picture. And we find that it correlates fairly well. The problem with the problem with the inspection method, as I see it, is that it has to be kept real time. You have to have an inspection program with staff and or consultants that continually go through an inspection process to keep that up to date, and we simply don't have that. So with the knowledge that we've gained as a system since merger and using this new approach, looking at more of a statistical approach, an accountant's approach, if you will, that gives us the ability to look long-term at what our funding requirements might be. But we still rely on the campuses to develop the individual projects. It's the campus president who tells us that the roof is leaking and here's a report that backs it up, or the boiler needs replacement and here's a report that backs it up. We also developed our request this year knowing it's an off-cycle bonding year, and so we kept our request to what we consider the most urgent projects. And so we look at the $40 million funded in 06 and we add $30 million requests. We look at it from a two-year cycle and look at a potential of $70 million for the biennium. There are two spreadsheets that I've given you today. The first is yellow, and you have that in your packet. It summarizes our $30 million request by project. It is not a priority list per se. It's alphabetical by campus. And you can see the split is about 36% or about $10.7 million of that would go to metro area institutions, and about 64% in greater Minnesota. There are 41 projects. If you couple that with the $70 million, if you couple it with the 2006 appropriation, it would allocate 30% metro and 70% greater Minnesota. Now, it's interesting in context there that 29% of our college and university space is actually in the metro area, and the balance in greater Minnesota. I mentioned this to the committee last year, and want to re-emphasize it again, that there's clearly that HEPR, spending HEPR money improves the energy condition of our campuses. Just in the roofs alone, when we go in on some of these older roofs and replace insulation, sometimes inadequate insulation, sometimes insulation that's been waterlogged for some period of time. We instantly improve the insulation value, exceeding state energy code in our designs for roof replacement. And we've had anecdotal evidence that we can save as much as 50% of the energy in a particular building just by replacing the roof alone. Certainly there's energy to be saved in mechanical systems, and particularly in modernizing their control systems, as well as improving the building envelope, windows, doors, utility systems, and the like. This committee in the past has always been interested in how quickly we spend the money. This graph shows how we have spent the 2005 HEPA appropriation, which was $41.5 million. We started in March 05. You remember that was an early bonding bill. And through the end of December, we have committed and put under contract over 90% of that money and have spent 80%. Our target is fully committed by March of 07, that's 2 years, and fully spent by December, by September in this case, September 07, that would be 30 months. So we're well on the way to do that. Had a little dip there in the last quarter, went below the line, but that's only $3 million, and that's all money that is programmed, under design, ready to go to bid, and it will be encumbered, will be committed by March, by the end of March. 06 got off to a good start. The 06 spending tracks from June of 06, when the money became available, to June of 08, and you can see both the commitment, the upper blue line, and the green line, little triangles, the spending line, both are above the plan curve. Our capital budget request also includes two property acquisitions. These were also before you last session. Excuse me, $1.8 million at Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College and $2 million at the Bemidji State University. The first map is that of is an aerial of Bemidji State University. The solid white line indicates 324 acres of that university property. And the property to be acquired is the old Bemidji High School property that is across Bemidji Avenue there to the left and shown in the dotted lines as parcels 1, 2, and 3. This acquisition has been before the legislature for a number of years. It's been on the board's request for at least two cycles in varying shapes and forms. And we are to the point now in discussing with the school district we're ready to enter into some binding agreements here if we're assured of the funding and can move forward. The money would acquire the property and it would demolish all the old high school buildings. At Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College, here again the campus is shown in the dark white, in the bright white solid outline. And the property to be acquired is shown in the dotted lines. The property on the south boundary, this is a small campus, by the way. I should start off by saying it's only 39 acres. And with a very, very high growth rate, high enrollment growth rate. And we had always looked at that southern boundary, those six properties on the southern boundary, as desirable to acquire to give the campus some growth space, to give them some breathing room as they expand. That acquisition was before you last year and was not funded. What was funded, however, last year was the addition of a cultural center, a multi-purpose building at the south end of the campus. And that just about abuts up to the property line with our neighbors to the south. And so this is a good time before we start construction next spring to acquire the property just to the south there, and so these neighbors don't have to contend with the college encroaching on their backyard property. There's also the parcel in the upper right-hand corner, the triangular piece, that just became available through through a death and through an estate settlement. And this is what I would characterize as a target of opportunity, in that we have a very willing seller here in the estate, the executor of the estate, and it's the right time to move on that piece of property.
Representative Solberg has a question.
Mr. Johnson, Mr. Chair, the six pieces of property on the Fond du Lac, next to the Fond du Lac campus, are all six of those willing sellers?
Mr. Johnson?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, the ones, to our knowledge, they are all willing sellers. There's some difficulty with one of the sellers because he's simply mad that the college is expanding. But he has indicated his willingness to sell as well.
Madam Chair, do you have a purchase agreement so we have a price for those?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, we do not have a firm purchase agreement as of yet. We're proceeding in that direction. We do have appraisals, however.
Madam Chair, just one other thing maybe to you or some of the staff. Of the $33.8 million requested from Minsky, and I don't remember what the request from the university was.
22.
How much of that is included in the governor's proposal to us for HEPA?
I don't believe that he includes a HEPA request in the governor's.
So there's zero amount included in the governor's proposal?
We don't have that in here anymore. At the next meeting, you're going to be hearing the governor's office present their proposal.
Madam Chair, one other question, if I may. As we look at the yellow sheet that you put out, Mr. Johnson, from Minsku, the first nine of them on the list you have as critical roofs and then other critical projects, are we to assume that the first nine are ultra-critical and the other ones are just critical?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, they're all critical. we put the roofs together for the visibility, frankly, that they are a part of the program that is the most visible. There are some critical items down below, and if we are not successful with $30 million, we'll have to look at the entire list. But all those roofs are in pretty bad shape at this point.
So, Madam Chair, one other thing then. So this list that we have in yellow is not necessarily rated as your system's priorities. Is that a fair statement? You just put the roofs on 1 through 9?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, they are not. It is not a priority list in and of itself. It represents our priority as a $30 million request, but the projects are not prioritized.
Madam Chair, do we have, Mr. Johnson, do we have that, or do you have a list that's prioritized?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I do not.
The system didn't do that?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, when we receive 360 HEPA requests and we have a backlog that we're dealing with, we recognize each institution's priority. Every president will say, I have a number one, and we try to get number one, and I have a number two, and I have a number three, and we try to prioritize the overall list that way so when allocation comes, hopefully we could fund priority ones and twos. As that list from last year, as it goes from $110 million to $80 million to $70 to $60 to $50, it doesn't always work out that way based on the urgency of the project. So, no, I do not have this $30 million total list prioritized at this point.
Madam Chair, just one other follow-up. The green list that we have.
Thank you.
Is that prioritized by campus?
Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I apologize. I was going to mention the green list. We put the green list together to show you how the $110 million request, again, by campus priorities, compared to the $40 million that was funded last year, compared to the $30 million that we're requesting this year. So you can see how they track across what was funded, what we are requesting. And you can see there are a couple of, as you go through that, there are a couple of schools where a new project appears not only back in 06, it wasn't on the original 110 list, but because by the time the appropriation was made, a project became urgent, and we respect the campus's request and reallocate money for that particular urgent project. So that's the intent of this this green list.
Thank you. That's it.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson, looking through this, as Representative Solberg was indicating, it seems to be a lot of need for roof repair. I was just wondering, is there an average life expectancy of a roof?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, it depends on the quality of the roof that's installed. We've found that some of the older roofs, from particularly from the tech college, some of the community college days, are experiencing a failure at the 15-year mark. And our plan has always been, or has been since, well, at least for the last 15 years, to replace all our roofs with something that would approach a 40-year roof, a fairly significant roof investment. And so far, we've been very successful.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, got one question about the policy that you were describing. We take every campus as number one, and then every campus as number two if you get that far and so on. But how do you balance it if one campus is number three is a more critical need than another campus is number one or number two? It looks to me like you'd have to take some sort of a look depending on what those needs were on those campuses. And I have another question after the
end. Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, we look at it in that light as we go down that list, that with the knowledge that we've gained since merger within my office, with the data that the condition assessments tell us, and with our dialogue with the institutions, we very well might pick someone's number three as more important than someone else's number one. It is possible as we go through
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, that answers the question, because I could see a scenario then where you'd be letting one go that might be a greater need than someplace else. So you do take a somewhat of a system-wide perspective then. I was left with the impression that you only looked at an individual campus need.
No.
My other question goes to the Bemidji request, and you mentioned the demolition. Does that $2 million reflect the cost of demolition as well, or would that be an additional cost after we acquire the land?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, that reflects the demolition.
Thank you.
And to make it into a green space.
Representative Lanning had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a follow-up to Representative Solberg's question, just to make sure I understand, Mr. Johnson, what you were saying, the green list by campus, are they prioritized? They're listed here?
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, they are prioritized by in the $110 million list. They were prioritized by campus, and then you see how the funding at $40 million, how it was allocated after the appropriation. So when the original 110 list was put together, it was by campus priority.
But thank you, Madam Chair. This particular list does not prioritize. This is not the order in which they're prioritized by the campus.
Mr. Johnson.
To take a look, if I might, Madam Chair, take a look, let's say, at Bemidji. The number 14 is listed at $2.1 million that was funded. Number 15, 16, is that the priority order for Bemidji?
Mr. Johnson?
That is the priority order for Bemidji. That is correct. Out of the looking at the 110 list and then looking at how it followed in 2006 with the $40 million allocation, we came down that list. Now, for example, number 15, you can see it was $90,000 against a $975,000 request. Well, that $90,000 is a reflection of funding the design for that chiller plant. And then you can see in 07 it carries over to $929,000, which would actually be the construction cost.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then the follow-up question would be, is when you move down the priority list in funding, let's say item 18 at $60,000, item 17 was skipped over. Whose decision was it then to skip over item 17? Was that an institutional decision or a systems decision?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning, at that point, it was a system decision at first based on the funding at $40 million and how to fit the critical items at each of the campuses within $40 million, and that required skipping over something like a half a million dollar tuck pointing project.
Thank you.
Further, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, looking at the green sheet, I'm wondering, I'm looking at line 2 and then line 53. And line 2 with Alexandria, where there was a repair and replacement for HVAC, request of $895,000 did not get funded, and now the request amount has gone up to $45,000 to $940,000. And then on line 53, the roof system request $395,000 did not get funded, is now up $20,000 to $415,000. So I'm just wondering, kind of scanning through these green sheets, are there certain things like roofs versus HVAC or other systems where it goes up more than inflationary, or are these real estimates? I mean, if we put more money into roofs, do we get a faster payoff or cheaper rate right now than if we were to put off things with HVAC systems? Is there any correlation between the systems, or is it all just sort of an inflationary increase you're looking at?
Mr. John.
Madam Chair, Representative, it is fundamentally inflation,
okay,
growth in cost over the initial request, because the initial request does go back to 2004-05 time frame.
Mm-hmm. Representative Colbert?
One little question, Mr. Johnson. Are you actually tearing down the old auditorium at by the Bemidji High School? Plan to do that?
Madam Chair, Representative Colbert, I'd be happy to have you take the first swing.
I think it should be preserved. It's a pretty nice building, and I understand the reason why.
Members, if you would just stay there, Mr. Johnson, because we want to be sure to get the student in, we had requests from several students to speak, and I believe one canceled, but I think Scott Formo is still here, Minnesota State College Student Association, or perhaps not a student, but the staff person. So welcome to the committee. Identify yourself, and the microphone is yours. And there may be some more questions for Mr. Johnson. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Scott Formo. I'm president of the Minnesota State College Student Association and also a student at Alexandria Technical College. Today I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota State College Student Association and also the Minnesota State University Student Association. We testified together the other day in front of the Senate Capital Investment Committee. But because they were unable to be here, they just overlaid the message from both associations. Basically, we're here today to support the 2007 capital budget request that MNC's brought forth. However, students believe that the first priority in capital spending is to take care of the buildings that we already have. Of the $73.8 million, of the $110 million that was unfunded, or that was brought forth last time, $70 million of it was unfunded, and the students feel that the committee should take a little bit of a broader look into the other $40 million that Minsky was not bringing forth in this capital bonding request. And actually, we would support a $73.8 million capital bonding request for Minsky projects. There's a great need for the remaining $70 million on our campuses. Without the additional funding, students' needs are either not being met, or colleges may be looking to raise tuition and fees to cover the difference, which is a whole different discussion. But currently, there are buildings on campuses across the state in dire need of repair. Right now, there are buildings with leaky roofs, old mechanical and electrical systems that are not up to code, and fire sprinklers that need to be installed. It's essential that the health and safety of students is ensured as they attend classes at our colleges and universities. It's also essential that the system is able to take care of the buildings already on the campuses to ensure that the classrooms that are used to educate our students are meeting the educational needs of their respective industries. HEPA projects also prolong the life of existing buildings, reduce the need for more brand new buildings, and while these smaller projects are not as glamorous as new buildings, they're absolutely integral to maintaining a safe and up-to-date academic environment. MSCSA and MSUSA urge you to support the Minnesota State College University's 2007 capital bonding request but to look beyond just the $30 million in HEPA requesting that, in the HEPA request, and consider the unfunded priorities of the $70 million from last year's request.
Other questions, Mr. Formo? If not, thank you for coming to the committee to testify. And if there are additional questions then of Mr. Johnson for that presentation, Representative Carlson.
Yeah, sure. I was curious. I was looking at Minneapolis Community Technical College, and there's a Skyway that there's a request for funding, Skyway A. I go down there once in a while. I'm not, they've got a couple of Skyways. I'm not sure which one that is, but that's not really my point. But then I look at the Wells Center, and that's also a replacement of a roof. And that's not being requested, as I understand your green sheet. What is the Wells Center? Are we talking about a classroom building there? And it would almost appear on the face of it we're putting a priority on the Skyway over what I think may be a classroom building. But if you could comment.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, you may recall the Wells Center is the old Wells family mansion. Off Loring Park, adjacent to the college. We're in discussions with that with MCTC right now about what to do long term with that building. It has a very high deferred maintenance. The roof is just one part of it, and we need to give some serious thought about that building in the long term.
Yeah, Madam Chair, now when you mention that it's the mansion, I know what you're referring to, and I can see the difference in your recommendation. Thank you.
Any further questions? Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam and Chair and Mr. Davis. This is just more of a general question. First of all, as the bonding tour went around all of the Minsky colleges, we were received very well. We really appreciate how generous you were with your time and staff and very well organized. We appreciated that a lot. Also appreciate the level of detail for the project by project and prioritization that we received going in. It was a great presentation from beginning to end. And I kind of used that to brag about your agency in comparison to other agencies that I was kind of frustrated with. We get a request, like for example, Department of Corrections to build a building. We didn't have a site, we didn't have a building, we need $12 million versus Minsky. You have pre-design, which is very, very structured, very, very multi-year process, which is very detailed going forward. And I was bragging about that to a architect on one of your projects, and he suggested that it was a good process, but it also was inappropriate process for a lot of the projects, and it ends up costing a lot more. Could you talk about just very in general how you approach the request of the committee? Because as I looked at other agencies, we're looking for models for how to make it better across the agencies. Just in general, respond to that, and how could you make it better, and do you see ways that you could improve for maybe smaller projects?
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, I think fundamentally we have insisted on pre-design, so we bring you the right number, and that's really what it boils down to. And so the pre-design, the work that should be done, should be completed before you see a project request. It should define the cost, the scope, the schedule, and it should be fairly concise and to the point. It doesn't need to talk about where the building is sited necessarily. It certainly doesn't need to talk about the design. I think different institutions, colleges and universities, approach the pre-design from frankly, from 32 different directions, and that's one of the functions that I think that we have been improving upon, is to try to limit the cost of the pre-designs so these pre-design documents deliver us just what we need: a good firm cost estimate, a definition of the scope, and some indication about how long the project is going to take to build. And some of our projects, we've even said, give us a pre-design light, which is a 4 or 5 pages of just simple narrative. Others, schools have found it necessary because they don't know what they can't define what they're really looking for. They know they need space, they know they need science labs, they know they need an auditorium, but they're not quite sure how to express that. And perhaps some of those pre-designs once the professional architect gets involved with faculty and staff, some of those tend to be the more expensive ones. But our approach has been simply use the pre-design document to tell us, give us the best indication about what this project really is. We don't want people to spend a lot of money on that. Incidentally, that does come out of college operating dollars, which we have found is that if the president of a college or university is really interested in getting a project, they will make the investment in doing a good pre-design to firm up their project definition.
Any further questions? Representative Singleton. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Johnson, I have just kind of a general question. I'm wondering about online learning and what impact or correlation that has for the maybe reduced need of building facilities in the future. Can you talk about where you see that going and maybe because more students are doing classes from their home, not actually using a building at some point, will there be a need for fewer buildings on campuses?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Tingle said, I don't think we've seen the, we haven't seen anything solid on that yet. We see a growth in our online courses. We see that students are enrolled in a given institution and attend classes and yet will also take an online class. And they may take that online class by sitting in the library or the cafeteria or from home. Or they may take an online class from another institution to supplement the coursework being done, the classwork being done at their home institution. So while we see the growth in online courses and online participation, we haven't seen any change in the need for students to be on campus. This would be a good discussion that perhaps we could take through the higher ed committee or come back to this committee with, because it is something that we have to think about, and in fact we've asked presidents in connection with our next bonding cycle to ask that question. If you're asking for more space, how does it correlate with your increase in online learning?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Johnson, to follow up on that then, so as far as the demographics, I know we're hearing in K-12 that there's a peak about this time, and there'll be fewer younger students, and certainly that follows up into higher ed, although MNSCU is obviously different than the U of M. But do you still see increased demand from people taking courses? I mean, you know, we hear about, in the next 20 years there's going to be 1 million additional people in Minnesota. Do you still see a growth in the need for higher ed and more people and therefore more facilities that correlates with that?
Madam Chair, Representative Finkelstein, we certainly see the long-term, the declining high school population, but we also see the growth in population. We see the growth in population, particularly in the immigrant communities, where the folks in those communities have not enjoyed higher education in the past. So we think there is a higher education need. It may be changing its appearances over the next several years. And look where the growth is, and you can see where we've been adding new space is fundamentally in the metro area or other population centers. And yet in greater Minnesota, where we have a presence, we've been focusing on maintaining and modernizing existing plant, not expanding that. And in some cases, even reducing the size of the existing plant in some places that have a declining enrollment.
Thank you. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, you get enough time to look at these lists, you begin to notice things. I have another question. Hennepin Technical College, for the benefit of the committee, they have two identical campuses built at the same time. And I see that they needed replacement of the HVAC and electrical and asbestos and pipe insulation on both campuses. By the way, they're identical floor plans. I see one is funded and the other is not. Why is one funded and the other not? Or what are your long-range plans there, since they're identical campuses, same age? Did the campus prioritize one over the other, or were they of equal priority? If you could explain that.
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I don't know the answer to that one. Let me do a little research, and I'll get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you.
We thank you very much for your committee presentation. And just a few items, members. At the last meeting, Commissioner Holston gave an update on the Minnesota Forest Legacy Partnership, and Representative Guinness has provided us with an article that really follows up on a few of those issues and particularly some of the questions she asked. They do particularly reference Minnesota in the article, and it is there for your reading and information. And the next meeting is on Tuesday, January 30th. We are back in the basement hearing room. At that meeting, Finance Commissioner Tom Hansen will present the governor's capital budget recommendations. We also have a bill up that day. There is a bill by Representative Tao that goes back to a project from last year, and they are asking for a two-word change in that bill. That bill will be before us, and those two items will be for your consideration. If there is no further discussion, meeting is adjourned.